A movie cost $200 million to produce. I get to pay $19. And I complained. And then I'd go to the store and complain about $9 organic bananas. The reality is I complained at every price level, $57, $19, and $9. $57 isn't a lot of money. Neither is $19, and neither is $9. I don't care what it is for. Just simply, $57 is not a lot of money. If I give you $57 for nothing, that is still not a lot of money. No one on this planet has a $57 problem. Not even the young man in some village in Afghanistan that won't earn $57 in 6 months. $57 can solve no one's problem. Why do I say that? Because $57 can't solve any problem that you or I have without leaving us with another problem. In 2008, after the economy crash, I woke up to this concept of money huge in a big way. A bank that I had three real estate loans with at the time defaulted. The bank went down. I didn't go down. The bank went down. I watched millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, okay, that I had accumulated through hard work disappear overnight. Had nothing to do with me. It was about a bunch of people taking on a bunch of debt. The bank defaulted. The fact that a bank defaulted made me realize that anyone who quits paying attention can bust out. I myself at that time had quit being fully obsessed. I had backed off. I was resting on my laurels. I had quit that monster hustle and had become a bit satisfied, fat and lazy. I don't mean overweight and lazy. I mean fat, mentally fat, lazy, mentally. I swore I would never do that again in 2009 because I put my family at risk and I got obsessed with digging my way out. I made a commitment to my wife. I will never, ever do this to my brand, my name, my dreams, or my family ever again. Dominate your money thinking. Look, most of us have been taught that money is the root of all evil. I mean, some of the stuff that we've been taught about money is just ludicrous. What does that even mean, the root of all evil? How about lazy is the root of all evil? And one of the things you don't talk about in our society is money. They tell you don't talk about it. In society, it seems that it's all right to tell people you're broke or you're suffering with money, but get rich and tell people, I'm rich. I got a jet. You start telling people, tell them what you do have. Oh my God, they'll stone you in front of your house. Tell them what you don't have. Tell them how bad it is. Tell them how tough it is. And they'll put their arms around you and spoon you before you go to sleep at night. We're screwed up. This society is so backwards. For most people, it's like hearing nails on a chalkboard when someone talks about their Rolls Royce, their jet, and their country club. Why? I want to give you permission right now to talk about your success. Instead of being offended, I think that's why so many wealthy people kind of go behind the scenes when they get rich. You don't see them anymore. They're worried about being stoned in public. It's happened before, you know. Instead of being offended by those who talk about money, you should avoid those who don't. Be wary of those who can't make money, who spend all their money, the pretenders. The people who can't pick up the bill, be suspect of them, not sympathetic of them. You can't learn anything from penny savers and misers who can squeeze the eagle off a quarter until it cries and flies. Look, it's not true that it takes money to make money. It's just another lie. The truth is it takes courage to make money. 80% of all millionaires today are first generation millionaires. That is, they weren't millionaires before. They didn't inherit the money or start with money. You have to be courageous to connect with new customers. You have to be courageous to dream and think big. You have to be courageous to get more attention. You have to be courageous to dominate your market and get all the customers. Look, making money, keeping money, and multiplying money requires a monster commitment, dedication, and an obsession with growth. Most people don't know how to make money. Fewer people know how to keep it. And almost no one knows how to multiply it. Look, if you work for someone else, take the responsibility right now for growing their company. Quit complaining about your salary and how long you work and say, I'm going to grow their income. If you grow your company's revenue, you become valuable. That will stack the deck for you. for both you and your employer. It will make you a dominating factor in your market. Quit being a mere spectator when it comes to making money. Be sure you're on the field trying to score. When you see the ball player, when you see LeBron sign a $1 billion contract with Nike, which I believe he will do, praise him. When you see a successful business person, man or woman, praise them. When you hear about somebody taking their company public, praise them. Look what they've done to get where they are. When you see somebody get lucky at a jackpot and they make $1 million, praise them big time. Luck is a good thing. Look, there's so much money on this planet, it is mind-boggling that so many people think about so little all the time. Mind-boggling that any person, anywhere in any economy, regardless of their skill set or the color of their skin, would have no money. Yet that's the fact with most people on this planet. Most people don't have any money because they believe there is a shortage of money. And they believe they don't deserve money and that it's hard to get money. See, I take the attitude that money's everywhere. I see it everywhere I go. I see my businesses everywhere. I see expansion everywhere. I see opportunity everywhere. You know why? Because I see people everywhere. I like people. Look, if you don't like people, you're not going to have money. Because people have the money you want. Everyone has money. And if they're treated right and provided with what they ask for and then more, they will happily trade with you this currency, this printed paper that they have in their pockets and their banks. See, my battle cry is, who's got my money? I've been doing this since I was a young man. Who's got my money for my new suit and shoes? Is that greedy? Is that selfish? Is that self-centered? Is that self-serving? I don't know. Maybe it is. You pick up a check every week. How do you make sense of that? I would look for customers to buy my products or services to get the money I need for the products I want. I want to do a big ad campaign nationally. Who's got my money to pay for this program? I want to expand. What do I need to do? I need to go meet more people. Instead of being obsessed with never having enough, focus on how much money there is and on getting in front of those people who need what you're offering. If you spend your time with a pig, you will get mud on you. If you spend all your time with people that don't have money, you will not have money. Who are you spending your time with? Look, money's everywhere. My goal is to get mine for mine. Because of my mindset, money comes to me. It doesn't seem like it's easily and effortlessly, but it does come abundantly and it's coming more often. Okay? I can spend a lot of it. I can give it away and I can still have plenty. That's the kind of money I want. Dominate the money thinking of people around you. Once you dominate you, once you start thinking different, and by the way, Playbook to Millions would be a great program for you to get you and your people on. It's a mind shift in money. I literally spend 80 hours showing you a new way to think about money, get money, find money, multiply money, and hold on to it and grow your business all at the same time. As important it is to dominate your own money thinking, you're never really going to get ahead until you get the people around you to see and treat money the same way as you do. See, I got a big problem at my company today. I got to get people around me to think like millionaires and multimillionaires and 100 millionaires. Otherwise, they're going to hold me back. If they can't work their own pay plan and grow that, if they become satisfied, they're going to try to pull me back like a rubber band. If your obsession involves building a great organization and not just working for someone else your whole life, you don't have to work for somebody else to do this, but you got to become obsessed with making sure there's money. Money must become a friendly topic in your company and with your friends and your family, not an enemy topic. This is true for management. It's true for sales. It's true for banking and finance, insurance and charitable philanthropy. Look, I raised $100 million. I helped raise over $100 million last year in my free time, whatever that means. Never found any time that was free. Look, they need to prosper. The people around you need to prosper. Your mommy, your daddy, your uncle, your aunt, and even the guy that says, I'm okay. We all good. I'm fine. I'm happy the way I am. Yeah, you all fine until you're not. And then you come to me and say, I'm not fine anymore. You weren't fine yesterday. You just didn't know it. Look, if you aren't influencing the way the people around you think about money, trust me, someone else is. That's why your presence, and that's why this book is so important. Look, I want this book to become a thing. I want this book to become something like The Inner Child was back in the 80s, where people are like, dude, let's get obsessed. See, but you got to get obsessed with all the parts of your life, everything, not parts of it. Otherwise, you get consumed by one part rather than a life. The goal here is to create a life, and your life needs money. Your life needs lots of money. That's why your presence and your example, the example you set regarding money, are key. Your ability to pick up a phone and produce money, bing, that's an inspiration to your people. Man, it's so hard out there. Really? Watch this. Lead by example. Making great financial decisions over and over and over makes people want to be around you. You're an example for your people. Look at the financial condition of those around you and see the results of the example you have set for them. They are an extension of your thinking. Are they in good financial shape or not? Are you putting discipline and ethics in on their financial lines? Are you letting the guy that makes 200 grand, you know, the first year go out and buy a big car? Are you putting some ethics in and say, hey man, do something, get rid of that money as fast as you can and put it in something where you can't blow it. Be obsessed about your people doing well and you'll become a giant in their lives. Show a man or a woman how to produce more money. Show a person how to get rich and they will be loyal to you forever. Why? Because they can take care of their family. They can fuel their own dreams. They will always connect you with that point where you made money an all right topic, a friendly topic. They'll become loyal and dedicated. Dominate your area of expertise. Become an authority on something and get your message out there. Sink your teeth so deep that no one can think about that topic, that subject, without thinking about you. We're talking about domination. What do you do better than anyone? What are you passionate about? What do you stay up for? What do you have strong opinions about? What is important for you and the world to know? What is it you would fight for, die for, think about all the time? What keeps you up at night? That's the play, man. Don't back off from the obsession. Don't talk politics. Maybe you need to. Maybe that's your deal. Okay? You'll get half the country right there. Half of them will hate you. Half of them will love you. Go all the way. A few years ago, I realized I was really bothered, or it really bothered me, that there were guys in the sales industry who were better recognized than me. I'm like, wait a minute. I got these other guys around me, man. People know their name and they don't know my name. It killed me that my name wasn't up there with the sales great like Tracy and Hopkins and Ziegler and so many of them. Where was my name on the list, man? My information is sick. It's crazy. I am the best sales guy on planet Earth. I'm not bragging. It's true. Okay. And by the way, it's not bragging if it's true. And it irked me. It gnawed at me that people were interested in other people's information that I thought was outdated. Mine was more current, fresh, 21st century. Why are they studying them, not me? Why are they looking them up and not me? But look, it was my fault. At the end of the day, I had never become obsessed with becoming known around the world. I had not yet become obsessed with worldwide expansion and had settled for the success of being a big fish in a little pond. To combat that and to figure out how to become known as an expert, new goal, new obsession, new game, new play, new future, I created this exercise. What you do is you take out a piece of paper, you draw your face in the center of that piece of paper. That personalizes this exercise and reminds you, who is at the center of all these things that are about to happen? It's you. Then what you do is you draw two columns. You draw two columns, one labeled professional life and the other the personal life. And in each column, write down what you have, what expertise you have, what traits mark you in each of those spaces. See, my chart looks like this. Professional life, sales genius, okay? Self-made. Everything and anything that you've ever accomplished in your life, you could write it down here. Author. I've written books, recorded programs, 12 of them, best-selling programs. Sold millions of dollars of copies of these programs. Speaker, multimillionaire, self-made, hectamillionaire, if you want me just to brag it out. Real estate investor, 4,000 apartments, tax audited, and won. Why would that be something positive? Because I did it multiple times, three times, in fact. Left state of California. God bless the state of California. Adios. Now I just use you. Social media dude, expert, top 10 CEOs in the world, one of the top 5 Twitter influencers in the world. I have an online academy to serve 20 million people last year. What else can I tell you? Automotive Insider. I work my buns off every day and I love it. Take good care of myself, but that's more of my personal life. Now, in my personal life, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a recovered drug addict. I lost my father, my brother, and my mother. It's not bragging. That just happened to me. That's an asset now. Identical twin, a philanthropist, work with the military, married an actress. I've lived in 5 cities. I'm spiritual, I'm healthy, and I make time for my family. Who are you? Look, if you don't know, nobody else will ever be able to pay you for what you don't tell them. If you don't even know, how could you even feel good about yourself? That's why I said earlier, my life started not when I was born, but when I committed to my self-improvement, my life improved. Once you have this list, start breaking down the categories on the professional side. Who are you? What are you? What have you accomplished? And I began to think about what it meant to be a sales genius. So I started extending this. What does that mean? I revolutionized the entire sales game. I changed an entire industry when I was 30 years old, and I'm still doing it today in other industries. I created best-selling audio and video programs, that I've written books, 7 books. I've related to sales and to growing business and to finance and how to become a millionaire. Being a sales genius also meant I could talk about different products within sales, closing. See, I'm expanding the content now. You're going to take your list and you're going to expand it, including closing, the sale, customer service, customer control, follow-up, cold calling, running a telemarketing team, long sales cycle, short sales cycle, retail sales, internet sales, webinar sales, selling online, selling door-to-door, selling from the stage, real estate sales, insurance sales. Like, dude, this guy's done a lot. I didn't even know that until I wrote it all down. Out of sight, out of mind. Look, once I had my list, I came up with a short statement of who I am and why I dominate this particular area of expertise under my professional. My statement was, I am the godfather of sales. No one is better, no one more current, no one more relevant, no one more effective than Grant Cardone. Now, it might sound like bragging, but it's not. It's true. And if it's true, it's not bragging. Look, the biggest companies in the world, trust me. I've done business with Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, Salesforce. I mean, I can just go on and on. Affleck, Northwestern Mutual. If you're the best, you're the best. And if you're not going to tell the rest of the world, at least tell yourself. Heaven forbid that you keep the big secret from your damn self. Doesn't make any sense. See, if you don't trust you, how's other companies going to trust you? If you don't trust you and know who you are, why would you spend money in advertising? All this stuff is connected. No wonder people value money more than they do themselves. Because they look at their money and give money value, and they forgot to give value to themselves. Who are you? What are you? What do you do? What does it extend to? Companies in the world trust me and my company to help them customize sales approaches. They give us money, lots of money, to provide a new customer experience, new approaches, and they believe we can get them results. But that starts with us. Dominate use first, and so you can then extend into the rest of the market. Next, I came up with benefits I could offer others in each of these categories. Remember, I took the sales thing and broke it down? Okay, what can I give people to solve that problem? Who are those buyers? What do they need? What's their price point? How can I help them? You know, when you meet somebody like me that does what I do, that creates all these products, I could also show you somebody that stands up on stage and has created no products, because it takes a lot of energy to create a product like this, or any product. We take products for granted because they're everywhere. It took a human being to become obsessed with a product. Velcro. Someone had to take and make a commitment and become obsessed with that sticky thing called. And everybody else is like, why didn't I think about that? You did think about it. You just didn't do it. You didn't become obsessed with it. See, I know I can teach anyone how to be great at sales. Introvert, extrovert, talk too much, talk too little. You can't even talk. I could teach you how to sell. You got a bad product in a bad economy in a terrible city with no money. I could teach you how to sell. I could take a good salesperson and make them great. I can take a great salesperson and make them a master. I can take somebody that hates sales and show them how to be brilliant at it. Look, If you don't know, how's anybody else going to know? If you don't dominate, how can you dominate? If you don't dominate yourself in your own thinking, how can you possibly even dominate the marketplace? You'll always notice opportunities to expand professionally from the point you listed on the personal side. For example, working with the military gave me the idea and passion to help transitioning veterans. So when I went down my list, I'm like, hey man, I worked at the Pentagon. I gave time to Fort Bragg and Fort Benton. Okay. What can they do? Oh, I should create a program for those guys in transition. I'll give it to them. Make me look good and make them feel good, and it'll help them. And maybe they don't kill themselves. And maybe it opens me up to some other businesses. Fast forward a few years, I was speaking to transitioning vets at the Pentagon and Fort Bragg and Fort Benning, as well as generals in Bogota, Colombia. So once you complete your chart, it's going to give you the ammunition to make a list of everywhere you can get and start to get your message out. This is how I began to dominate my brand. Now, more on that in the next section, but the process of writing out what my expertise is, and in your case, what your expertise is, and why it helped me push myself to the next level, it's going to show you how much potential there is. It's going to show you where you can push. It's going to show you how little you've actually achieved and keep you hungry. So be relevant. You need data. To be obsessed, you need data. This isn't just a motivational seminar. It's like, I need data to fuel my obsession. Use this little exercise that I did above to clarify what you are best at and what you're an expert in and what gets you excited and where you can help people. But remember, this will keep changing and expanding throughout your life. So this might be something you want to print off and do over and over again. Revisit the exercise a week from now, 2 weeks from now, a month from now. Run it again and again to give you the fuel you need to tackle any industry that you're in, or to maybe start moving into other industries and dominating them as well. Look, stay in the game and keep feeding your obsessions with information, with proof and validation that will give you the courage to continue to dominate your space and start taking on more, even multiplying spaces. And you will see you can do more than you have even dreamed. Dominate your brand. In the past few years, I became one of the leading authorities on social media. Actually, I'm being humble when I say that. Last year, my online presence hit almost 200 million. We could double that this year. When I started using social media, someone asked me, how do you calculate the ROI? The guys that do nothing always get very complex. Make that a note. Note to self. The guys that do nothing always get complex first. He says to me, how do you calculate the ROI, return on investment, on your social media? I looked at him and said, dude, I'm not doing social media for customers. I'm doing social media because I'm obsessed with owning my sector and making my name known and synonymous with all those things that I do. You want a return on investment? I want people to know me. You are doing a calculation that is destined to die, and I am doing an expansion that will make sure I live forever. I want every sales organization, in fact, since then, every human being on the planet to know my name. And I want to dominate my competition. I want to put them on their heels. I want to incite fear into my competitors, and I want to kick them completely into submission and apathy until they admit to themselves, dude, this Grant Cardone guy, he is gone. This Cardone guy, I don't want to play with him, man. He's out there. This Cardone guy will outspend me. He'll outwork me. This Cardone guy, as they secretly admit to themselves, is in another league. See, the reason I dominate social media, the reason I advertise, the first reason I would advertise, the first reason I would spend a penny in any kind of ad or branding is not for customers. It is simply to set my competition on their heels, to dominate their thinking. I want them thinking about me when they wake up in the morning, not their plan. Okay? In fighting, it's called fight your plan, not theirs. Fight your fight, not theirs. If I can get you to change that and fight my fight, I might win. See, I became obsessed with communicating to the world. I became obsessed with communicating my ideas, my solutions, my opinions, and I found every outlet possible to push content through. If content is king, I became a content factory. Single individual that produces content every day. finance, sales, closing, follow-up, relationships. How could one guy talk about so many different things? Well, because I made my list. I made my list and I do a lot of things. I put out some almost 100,000 Twitter posts. When we wrote this book, it was 78,000. It'll hit 100,000 before this book gets posted. Okay. In 48 months, 9,000 videos in 5 years. Is that too much? I don't know. The only reason you'd say it's too much is because somebody else did too little. Did it bother some people? Probably. Hope so. Oh, I pray it did. Maybe it bothered my competitors. But my competitors over the last 4 or 5 years have literally turned over space and customers for me to conquer. Not even conquer. Just to have. Clearly, I use social media far beyond any normal. I mean, I'm not normal. I'm obsessed. Didn't I say that? I think the book says, let me check the cover again. Be obsessed or be average. Okay. If they ever make a normal t-shirt, nobody will buy it. Who wants it? Do you want it? What are you doing with this book if you want normal or average? Okay. Look, I use social media far beyond any normal person would. Maybe even civil person. Maybe if it's even like bordering on insane. But I promise you this. What I do is what is necessary to be known. Just today, I told my internet department, I'll call them the internet department, not the IT department or the communications or anything like that, to gather enough content to post a tweet every 6 minutes for a total of 100 unique tweets every day. Anyone who says this is too much doesn't understand the enormity of the internet and the social media space. It's a massive space. I know people that tweet or Facebook post 3 times in a day and think that they did a bunch. It's like throwing a brick in the Grand Canyon. Can you fill up the ocean by throwing a rock into it? Look, the reason so many people fail with everything, including social media, including marketing, including traditional advertising, is they underestimate the effort required to dominate their niche. Look at the guy with the MyPillow on TV. Or how about the local mattress dealer in your city or the car dealer that's on banging? No money down, lowest payments in town, friendly Ford. They bang all day long. I told the car dealer, why are you on TV? Cause I can be, cause I'm going to dominate that TV. But Rick, nobody's watching TV. Okay. Well, I'm still on TV. Look, I'll give you the perfect example of what works and when it works. When social media became a way of life, 3 groups formed. Those who resented it, 2, spectators that used it, and 3, those who used it to market and get themselves known. The first 2 groups are massive. They're giant. That is what actually makes up social media. I was originally in the first group, the ones that resented the platforms. I just didn't understand them. Most people resent the thing that they don't understand first. The first response to everything is, I resent it. But soon enough, I quit resenting social media when I discovered what a powerful tool, how much leverage it had, and started using every channel ferociously. I actually switched to 3. I went from 1, skipped, and went to 3 because I know being a spectator, just looking at it, is not the place to be. I mean, come on. The platforms are free. They have no limits. There's no regulations. This is a dream come true. I could post anything I want, as long as I want, however I want, as often as I want, and the bill is 0. Before long, I was posting so often that others wondered how. First of all, they hated me. And then it was like, how does that guy do that, man? How big is his company? How much does he work? Are there more than one of him? Well, yes, there is, but we'll leave that for another topic. Look, I went from not understanding social media to being one of the top global users on this planet. I am obsessed with getting my name associated with everything, sales, business, finance, money. I took my expertise, having the best, most relevant information on sales as one topic, and translated that into a dominant brand. I'm doing that in real estate now. I'm going to do it in finance. I'm going to do it in all things that are 10X, that are expansive. Look, you can make positive changes to dominate every sector of your life starting right now. You can do 20 push-ups right now and start to change your physical condition right now. You can get on the phone right now and make a sale to improve your finances right now. You can send a video to one of your kids or your spouse and tell them how much you love them right now. Or you could do all of them right now. You can combine, feed, and strengthen multiple areas at once as long as you are obsessed with your life and not a sector of your life. The rising tide of your efforts can lift all boats of your life if you choose to dominate. Chapter 7, Stay Dangerous. Look, trying to avoid danger in a world that's filled with danger is impossible. Bad things happen to good people every single day. Good employees get laid off. Maybe that happened to you before. Companies treat their employees well and then lose them to other companies that offer some better perk. Sometimes you lose money before you can even make money. Sometimes you got to invest money on things that don't work out. Truth is, you live in a dangerous environment. Customers betray you for the competition. Your spouse might even leave you. It's happened to me, not in this current marriage. The stock market's not going to coddle you, and the economy will punish good people and bad people alike. By being careful and trying to avoid danger, people actually spend their lives in danger. Avoiding danger makes sense only if you want to make sense. The only way to reduce risk is to take risk in this new economy. While it might seem counterintuitive, it's actually safer to be at sea than tied up at the harbor. Especially because that big ship that you own wasn't built for the harbor. It was built for deep waters, high swells, long journeys to where people fish for the big fish and treasures await for you. Comfort is your biggest threat in this new economy. Because in your effort to find or maintain success, you could lose out making gains toward your potential. Look, you got to go where it's dangerous. And you need to be dangerous when you get there. The only way to guarantee your safety today is to become obsessed with being the most dangerous person in your environment. And that doesn't mean anybody needs to get hurt. In fact, if you can get there, nobody needs to get hurt. Look, if you aren't dangerous, you're a threat to no one. And you'll be pushed around by competitors, customers, vendors, employees, your spouse, even your kids. Don't live any more of your life cowering, being careful, fearful, timid, or accommodating. Look, here's some ways that I practice being dangerous. Get out of your hometown. Maybe it's time to leave mama. You know what I'm saying? Did you know that according to a 2008 Pew Research report, 88% of all people live within a couple of miles of where they grew up? The best moves of my life took place when I left what I was familiar with, where there was comfort, where I knew everyone and got out of there. Comfort is the enemy of the obsessed. To be dangerous, you must force yourself out of your comfort zone, literally try a new city. The first move I made in my life was from Lake Charles at 29 years old. I moved to Chicago. I took on this job in Chicago that was going to force me to have to travel around the United States. I had an option. I could have gone to Baton Rouge, which was only about 90 minutes away, where I had people there. I took the scarier move, and the more dangerous move actually put me in a position to grow more. I did that for a year and a half. I moved back to Lake Charles. I'm looking at what I'm going to do. I knew I was going to start my own business. And my move was to get out of Lake Charles. I turned into a little bee. I turned into a little baby boy. I turned into a little punk. I contracted. And my big giant next move was from Lake Charles to Baton Rouge, which was like 60 minutes. And I was starting my business there. I'm telling you that to tell you this. I moved there because it was comfortable. I had my brother. I had my two sisters. I had a baked-in microwave community, and I had to start my business there. And I spent 5 years in Houston starting my business. I wasted the first two of the 5 years with my baked-in community because I was comfortable, all right? And I realized after 3 years, I finally punched it up and started my business. My next big move was to La Jolla, California, where I knew no one. Every time I've moved to a space where I knew no one, my expansion was a lot faster. I lived in La Jolla for 12 years, okay? I found myself, again, just like rocking and rolling because I didn't have people. I didn't know anyone, so I went there, kept my focus and my attention. See, I was in a dangerous environment. Made me more dangerous. And what happened after many years there. I spent 12 years in La Jolla. I started to get comfortable again. Everyone knew me. I wasn't meeting new people anymore. I wasn't growing anymore. I'm walking around patting myself on the back constantly thinking I'm the big cheese in town because everybody knows me and I know everybody, and I got comfortable. And I wanted to find a wife and I couldn't find my wife. I knew everybody in town. You're somewhere 12 years and you're looking for a wife and you don't find her, you might be in the wrong city. Okay. If you're 12 years in a city and you're not making more money every year, you might be in the wrong city. Okay. If you know everybody where you live and your income's not getting better, your checking account, your savings account, your net worth didn't expand, it might be time to move to some other place. Okay. So look, I wanted to find my wife. I wanted to start a family. It was clear to me that wasn't going to happen in San Diego. I packed up everything, literally over a weekend, sold the house I was in, packed up everything, moved to the big city of Los Angeles. I mean, that's a dangerous place to go to. Okay. I mean, you want danger? Go to LA, Chicago, New York, Dubai. Go somewhere where it's dangerous, right? Where you don't know anybody. Okay. I met my wife the first night. Okay. Literally, I moved into a hotel from a house, left my office. I was more productive from a hotel in a dangerous environment than I was where I was comfortable. I had no friends there. I ended up building a big network of people there, but it forced me to continue to build my business and my life and thrive while pursuing my wife. So fast forward to a few years later, I was still successful, but feeling the itch of being a little too comfortable. 3 years ago, Elaine and I picked up. We left our familiar, comfortable surroundings and moved across country to Miami. Again, on a whim. I called Elena one day. I heard that they were going to be raising taxes in California. I wrote the governor a letter and said, if you raise, I'm out of here. I'm looking for a reason to move anyway, son. And he didn't write me back, hurt my feelings a little bit. I'm like, you know what? I need to get somebody's respect. I'm going to move. I got to get my own respect. So literally, I put the house in the market, sold the house. We moved, not knowing where we were going to go. She's like, where are we going? Where are we going? I said, I don't know, but it's going to be 0% taxes when I go there. Okay. And we're going to go there and we're not going to know anybody and it's going to be great. See, once you start moving and then you realize I can go anywhere. I can recreate myself anywhere. If you're obsessed with what you're doing, it doesn't matter where you are. If you're not obsessed with what you're doing, you're probably going to look for as much comfort as you can get. We moved to Miami, knew no one, Elena, two kids. We move across country and we set up a new life, a new company, a new business, and it's been awesome for us. Look, all these moves proved to be monster personal growth builders for me. They gave me confidence that I have the ability to be nimble, that I can succeed anywhere, that I can make friends anywhere, that I can create a community anywhere, that I can create my own happiness independent and not fixated on a location. I see so many people stuck in one location thinking, I'm safe if I stay here around family and friends. Look, you're only safe if you're dangerous, okay? People do not jack with dangerous people. They leave them alone. So if you can be that person that's nimble, that's willing to move, that's willing to be mobile, that's willing to get up and leave, that's willing to tell a government, nope, you can't get any more money from me, I'll just leave, okay? Then you become dangerous, which means you become independent. You'll guarantee your success. Surveys suggest that moving is one of the most stressful things a person can do. Oh my God, we're moving. It's going to kill us, okay? You mean you moving from Tulsa to New York is going to be, what's going to happen to you? Okay, if people become so punk-like that they can't move, why is it the same person that says moving is stressful will spend or borrow money to travel for adventure? You call it stress if you have to move for opportunity, but you call it relaxation and recreation if you spend money to go on a vacation. Okay? Come on. What's wrong with you? You know what's wrong with you? You're not obsessed. Okay? You're a damn spectator. Look, being the biggest fish in a small pond means the death of everything. You're gonna die in the small pond. Okay? If there's any toxins in the small pond, guess who dies first? The big, fat, lazy fish, okay? And then all the crabs come and just feed off of you. You want to be moving. I don't need to be the biggest. I need to be the fastest. I need to be mobile. I need to be moving. I need to be obsessed. And I need a big freaking ocean to swim in so I can consume the other critters. See, being the biggest fish in the smallest pond, what is that? Is that ambition? That is the death of ambition. That's one of the reasons I believe that moving away from your hometown, away from mommy's titty, and moving often are worthwhile risk. Okay? Come on, grow up. There's no growth. I know some of you are like, but I'm taking care of my mom. I'm taking care of the kids. But the kids have their friends. Okay? Well, whose life are you living now? Is it your life or the kid's life? As soon as the kids grow up, they're moving. I guarantee you they're going to leave. I hope they hear this. They're going to leave now. 12 years old walking out. I'm out of here. Grant Cardone said be obsessed. Look, there's no growth in staying where you are, right? There's no opportunity in comfort. How can you find opportunity in a lazy boy? They ain't no money in your living room, okay? To pursue my goals, to pursue your goals, to continue to fulfill your potential, you gotta remove yourself from this idea that you have to somehow be comfortable. What I know and what I am comfortable with is not going to get me to the next place. You need to search for the unknown. Like, let's go get dangerous. When I do that, when you do that, you're going to reawaken your obsessions. You're going to force yourself. You force yourself to focus on your purpose rather than, oh, I got a little Bobby coming over tonight. We got a little family game tonight. We're going to play Monopoly. Okay. I got my little local poker game where we play 1-2 poker. Stay dangerous. Okay. Get around new people. Challenge yourself. Extend yourself. Okay. Make yourself have to go out and know people. You're introverted because you refuse to extrovert. You understand? You're comfortable because you want to avoid danger. And by doing so, you remain in a dangerous situation. Stay dangerous because no one knows where you're going to be next. What will this cat do? Who are these people? These people are crazy. People will flow admiration to you because you're willing to do things other people won't do. Constantly connect with new people. Regardless of where you live, okay? Let's say you're still living your hometown. Let's say you can't leave right now. Make it a point to start meeting new people. Maybe your next big move needs to be across town. I don't know. Maybe you don't have the guts to move to California and then to Miami. I might move out of the country one day. I need to know that I can do those things, okay? There's no glory in living in one of the greatest countries on the planet, okay, and spending all your time on the couch or at the club, the same club, even with the same people. If you're not constantly connecting with new people, more influential and smarter people, whether it's online, in person, over the phone, at conferences, through mentors, and everything in between, look, you're putting yourself in danger. Okay, just adding the same familiar high school friends on your Facebook page is not expanding your obsession, okay? Your future success is dependent upon people, not machinery. I need to expand the people that know me. If you have the same three friends that you had when you were 8 years old, you're obsessed, but you're obsessed with staying small and familiar and comfortable. So be willing to be uncomfortable. Do you want to know what has terrified me the most in my life? I remember speaking to 5 salespeople in Rockford, Illinois when I was 29 years old. There might have been 10 people in the room. I don't know. I remember there was 10 people maybe in the owner or 5 people. I was terrified. It was scary. Oh my God. I'm in Rockford, Illinois. I didn't even know there was a Rockford, Illinois. First time I did a radio interview, I did a radio podcast with Adam Carolla. I was scared. I don't know what I was scared about, man. I make more in 1 week than he makes in a year. What am I worried about? Okay. I remember my first TV interview with Neil Cavuto on Fox News. I have more experience on this planet than Neil Boy does, but I was scared. So what? Once I consume this danger and this fear, once I consume it, once I walk away from it, maybe not that week, maybe a month later, a year later, when I can start stacking these, what happens? I eat fear and I become dangerous. Speaking to 1,000 top sales agents with Northwestern Mutual, these guys earned $1 million, $970,000 on average, made me stronger. Speaking at the Pentagon to generals, colonels, and troops in transition, that was scary for me. How about this? Speaking to 400 people at a church in Nashville about the combination of economics and spirituality. I was terrified. It was a new presentation for me. I went down to Bogota, Colombia, and spoke to 800 generals in training that are going to run the Colombian government. I was scared. Not only was I scared, my presentation was terrible. Okay? See, those things, when I put myself in danger, when I put myself in a position to flop, to screw up, to fail, to not do well, when I walk away from it, I know it's terrible in the moment, right? When you walk through the ghetto where there's people, there's guns going off, okay? You go into a battle zone and it's dangerous. You ride with the popo for a week and learn what the popo go through, okay? Okay, you know what I'm saying? Man, when you survive those situations, you come out stronger. Look, I was terrified in every one of those situations. They were all uncomfortable for me. Still, I stayed dangerous by reaching, by forcing myself to reach out of my comfort zone and meet new people, to push myself at that party to meet the person I don't know, or to go ask for the business card, or to ask for the cell phone number. I was on a plane yesterday with the CEO of Ashley Furniture. And I said, before I left, I said, look, I need your cell phone. I said, because my guys are too chicken to ask for it, right? I need to use the danger, the sense of danger, fear, rejection, loss. I need to use that as an indication of what to do. It's okay to be unpopular. You can look like everyone's favorite uncle and still be the most dangerous person in the space. Okay, you understand what I mean? You can be nice to everyone. You can be respectful. You can have good manners. But success is not a popularity contest. I can still look like a normal person and be dangerous. I don't need to hurt anybody. Nobody needs to die. I don't need to look like ISIS. Okay, I can be dangerous. I don't need to pack a show of gun in public to be a dangerous person. What I'm talking about danger here is not doing stupid things, not making yourself look dumb. I'm talking about be willing to do the things that other people are not willing to do. I'll give you an example. I was working on this $32 million real estate deal I was buying in Savannah. All the parties had agreed on a price. We were in the deal. It was December 2 years ago. It's a favorite time of the year for me to buy things. Okay, that's another book though. And the reason why, I'll just tell you the reason why, is because nobody's buying deals in December. Everybody goes off to see Santa Claus, even people that don't believe in Santa Claus. So toward the end of my due diligence, I realized in this transaction that it was in my best interest to renegotiate the price. Now, the problem with that is this. When you renegotiate a price on a $30 million real estate deal, these are very sophisticated people. This is what's called in that business a retrade. And nobody likes a retrade. Nobody likes a retrader. Okay. Nobody likes thinking they have a deal and then somebody comes in at the end and says, hey, dude, I need another, $1 million off. Everybody hates that guy. Okay. So I'm in this situation though. And by the way, remember what I'm obsessed with. This book is obsessed. Be obsessed or be average. I need to be obsessed with winning. Okay. You must be obsessed with your mission becoming a reality without you doing a bunch of stupid stuff on the way there, because those are going to be setbacks. Failure is the inability to properly assess how much energy it takes to make something happen, all right? A person doesn't use enough energy, doesn't confront enough boogeymen, doesn't make enough right moves, they're going to fail. So you could literally avoid failing simply by knowing when to exert enough effort in every situation, and you would never fail. So here I am in this deal. I'm looking at it. I'm like, there's something wrong with this deal. I can make sense at 32, but I can make a lot more sense at 31 and even more sense at 30. Problem is, nobody likes a retrader. People hate the retrade. They hate it. They despise you. I can literally ruin my reputation. So I'm wondering to myself, here we are moving into, the end of the year. Jesus is about to have his birthday. We're going to celebrate that around the world, or most parts of the world. Families are buying presents. Everybody's getting ready. Kids are off. Everybody's excited, right? These guys think they have a deal. I think I got a deal. And I'm like, man, how do I tell this cat? How do I tell him, dude, I'm about to retrade on you? Oh, you ever been in that situation where you had to tell somebody? Some of you can't even send your food back. It didn't come as warm or too hot or too sweet, or it didn't come the way you want it. You won't even send your food back. Because you avoid danger at all costs. You'd hate to have somebody think poorly about you, wouldn't you? I hope I'm grinding on you right now. I called the listing agent up. I said, look, I got to pass on the deal. What? At this price, based on these things, this deal no longer makes sense to me. Grant, we agreed on a price. I know we did. And I agreed on it. I wanted to buy it. I'm trying to buy it. By the way, how many other people are trying to buy this deal right now? I think we're in the first week of Christmas. Santa's getting ready to happen. He's going to go off. The elves are going to be flying all over the place. Jesus is going to have a birthday. Okay. Look, man, I got a bunch of time, energy, and effort. Now, you see, what I do is I start exerting some energy right here. I got all this time, energy, and effort, and then I find out, bang, 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 I'm at 32. Man, it's too much. I just can't pay 32 on the deal. I don't want to renegotiate. I don't want to retrade you. I'm not going to make you another offer. I'm just going to tell you. Now, everybody got tense, man. I could feel the emotion. You know, people don't need to talk to get emotional. I can feel the emotion just running off this guy. The broker immediately started to, I could see he went into, oh my God, I could experience him. You got to be in the moment, man. Dig this, man. Dig the danger, baby. Okay. This guy, first thing he's thinking is this. What is the seller going to think about me? He's worried about his reputation, number one. And I'm waiting for him to transition from his reputation to his fee. Cause that's about to happen. You know, how does he go back? He's wondering, how does he go back? How does he keep me in this deal? So he's trying to figure out how to hold on to it. By asking for a discount, by the way, I risk being labeled that retrader. So I didn't ask for a discount. What did I tell him? I just need to get out of the deal. Okay. Fireworks went crazy. Okay. He's like, hey, they're going to sue you. This is going to be a problem. You're past your due diligence. I'm like, whatever, dude. You're going to sue me for $350. They're going to sue me for $350. I'm going to countersue them for the $350 because I didn't know bing, 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 and bing. Okay. They're going to tie the property up. Okay. I'm going to tie the property up. The lawsuit will tie the property up. They won't be able to sell. By the way, I thought that's what they wanted to do. See, you got to be in the game. You cannot do this from the back seat of a car or laying back in an RV, and you can't do it from your sofa. You got to do it on your feet, eyes wide open. You got to have this heart thing, whatever this heart thing is. I don't think it's actually the muscle heart. I think it's something going on with you, the energy of the being. It's like, I'm in this deal to win. Okay. Look, no one wants to lose. Okay. No one wants to be beat up. No one wants to be seen as a retrader. They don't want to be retraded on. But for me to stay in this deal at that already negotiated price. Okay. Now understand, we're dealing with something moral here. I made an agreement to buy something. They agreed to sell me something at this price. I found out a new piece of data, okay? Some moral agreement would say, you already have a deal, do the deal. But this new piece of data put me at risk. So am I willing to put my ethics, my standards, my morals, my code, my reputation at risk to be in danger in order to make sure my family is taken care of? I knew I needed to renegotiate. I knew it would upset people. I knew it could possibly damage my reputation. This is a real life practical on what it means to be dangerous. So I got to get on this very tense call with the people involved in the deal. Nobody likes it. A few moments into the conversation, a broker says to me, how much money do you need to make sense of the deal? I said, well, dude, 29, I can make sense of the deal. 3 weeks, I'm being cursed. I mean, I'm talking about people that don't curse are cursing me. Threats of lawsuits, hostility, anger, uncertainty everywhere. We're wondering, am I going to get sued? What's this going to be? I mean, we're all going through it, this whole like craziness, right? The deal was closed at $29,200,000, saved me $2.8 million. And I'm going to tell you, looking back, I've owned that deal for 2 years now. I'm glad I did every penny of it. It was the right thing to do because the deal has been a tough deal for me to be in. So the point of that is what? Okay, you got to be dangerous. My wife asked me during this, how can you do this? Everyone is going to hate you, she said. I said, look, man, this is not a popularity contest. I'd rather others think less of me than me think less of me. I challenge you. Who do you want to think less of you? Other people or you? I'd rather a broker, an agent, a seller think less of me than put myself, my business, my future, and my family in danger. I don't need to be the nice guy. There is no popularity contest going on here. High school ended for most of us a long time ago, and there was no payday there as well. And I'm not just willing to go along to get along. I just can't do it. I can't eat it. Look, I wasn't trying to play games with these people. I was trying to buy their property. Look, there's been plenty of deals that I've been in where I went and paid not just the agreed upon price, but even more in order to get a deal, because that was the reverse side of danger, right? There could be a situation, I just did one right here in Boca, where I overpaid for a piece of property to have the property because I believed that if I was willing to do that, put myself in danger and overpay for the property, that I could actually convince somebody later to also do the same thing. Look, in the case where you have to renegotiate something, okay, which is putting yourself in danger or making a sales call or whatever, it's about being obsessed with the outcome. In this case, I had to renegotiate, and I'm glad I did it. As I turned out, the property would have been a good deal at the higher price, but it's a better deal. It's a sure thing at this price. So sometimes by being dangerous, you actually take yourself out of danger. Look, I have an obligation, and you have an obligation to make great deals. And I'm willing to put myself, and you must be willing to put yourself in harm's way to ensure that the greater priorities are never compromised. Deal making is an art. I could write an entire book about that, and I probably will. But there's a line that I will not cross, and it's this simple line. Because I know some of you are asking, when do you give your agreement to someone, and then you don't cross that line? Here's my answer to that. I will never, ever change my mind on an agreement if I can't make sense of why I'm changing mine on that agreement. I don't cross the line if I can't validate why I should cross that line. Do you understand? So for me, when I make an agreement to do something, I'm there. I'm like, I'm going to fulfill that until I get new data that says that agreement is no longer a good agreement for me, you, or anyone. Oh, by the way, if it's not good for me, it's not good for them. So most people, unfortunately, are not willing to have the conversation and say, hey, dude, this doesn't work anymore. So they're stuck with something bad. I could give you a list of industries and corporations that will go out of business because they can't tell the people, hey, we made a deal. We promise you X. Now we look back because of new technology or advancements. We can't do that anymore. And the company or the entire industry goes away. I know how much effort and energy it takes to make almost $3 million. And as long as I can make sense of why I'm doing what I'm doing and willing to put myself into 3 weeks of emotional hell and danger and unpopularity to avoid years of economic danger, I'm willing to put myself at risk. Take risks with your investments. Look, the entrepreneur puts his or her own capital at risk. The definition of the entrepreneur is someone that organizes a business. The role's very definition, a person who organizes and operates a business or businesses taking on greater than normal financial risk in order to make money. I'd argue that the definition is not quite right because you can't actually make money, okay? You can't actually make money. The Federal Reserve makes money. You put what you have today at risk or borrow that money, somebody else's money, hold on to that money for a little while, reinvest it, and do the same over and over and over again. Investing in a new business is dangerous. You're putting your time, your energy, your resources, and your name at risk in order to make money. But also, at risk, when you work for someone else and or invest in someone else's ideas, you're at risk. Doing nothing, you're at risk, right? There's risk everywhere, no matter what you do. Why not pour everything into whatever it is you're doing? Get obsessed with that thing. Look, middle-class Americans have been brainwashed, been made to believe that they should diversify their investments, spreading their risk over 6, 8, 10, maybe even 100 investments. Oh, let's just throw it in a mutual fund. We won't even know what it's in. And then we somehow reduce our risk. We were taught to play a long game and be safe, okay? But the legends of investing, and I get a lot of heat for this, but the legends, like Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban says, diversification is for idiots. I remember reading that. I'm like, yeah, dude, it's ridiculous to be in 100 investments. Why would you want to be in 100 investments? Well, if you're in 100 investments, the belief is one or two will pay off. If you're in the beginning of creating wealth for yourself, you don't have money to put in 100 investments. When you're trying to grow something, you need to be at risk. When you're trying to conserve something, it means you have something. See, the problem with the middle class is that it's got the whole thing backwards. If you got $1 billion, yeah, diversify. You'll have to, okay? But if you got 10,000 bucks, if you don't go all in on the right thing, you're never going to get rich, okay? Making 100 investments with $10,000 means you're not going to make money on anything. Even if one of them goes out of the park and goes up 500 times, you had so little money invested in it, multiply a dollar times $5 of 500, and it's still $500. So you didn't, you understand? So the philosophy that Mark Cuban had was, look, know what you're doing, take your money, push all in. His philosophy echoes that of the great Andrew Carnegie, who today would be worth $500 billion. Andrew Carnegie said the way to become rich is to put all your eggs in one basket and then freaking watch that basket. What he didn't say is become obsessed with that basket. Protect that basket. Make sure that basket has some baby chickens, maybe even a goose. The reason you are taught to diversify is because the experts assume that you're so stupid and so lazy that you'll never do your own homework to properly invest. So they're like, you're so dumb. You're so stupid. The American people are so ignoramus that we'll tell them, we'll just convince them, hey, you're so dumb. They won't say that. They'll put it on a brochure that their investment overpaid.